Chapter 50. Golden. April 30th arrived with no more fanfare than any other day. Harry spent it just as any other Tuesday, ducking a flying Professor Flitwick as Neville and Yusuke miscast charms, transfiguring his ferret into a brown furred flamingo, and so forth. Oddly, although Hermione and Ron bickered more and more shrilly as the day passed, Harry's nerves settled as dinner ended and sunset approached. "I'm getting too used to this," he thought, mechanically changing into his pajamas upstairs in Gryffindor Tower. "Do you have the map?" he asked Ron. Ron waved the sheet of parchment at him. "You'll wake me if anything weird happens, right?" Ron finished. He fished out his wand and tapped the parchment. "I solemnly swear I am up to no good," he told it, as Harry finished buttoning his pajama top. "Let's see. Minamino's down in his dorm. Hiei's in the library. His sister's in the courtyard with Kuwabara. Won't he be pissed about that? Just as long as nobody sneaks in and they don't try to sneak out," Harry said, clambering into bed. Ron tossed him a mock salute before Harry shut the curtains. "Night, Harry. Night, Ron." Hiei returned from the library with a heavy, well-subdued copy of The Monster Book of Monsters, Junior, in his bag, giving the fat lady the password. He climbed through the portrait hole into the common room, glancing around for a seat. Most of the places were taken, Gryffindors of every age having gravitated back to the tower after twilight. But Hiei's preferred spot on the windowsill nearest the fire was open. He flung his cloak over the stone and sat, kicking his bag onto the other half of the sill to keep others from taking the seat, and settled back with his book. Or at least, he tried to. He had the misfortune to wind up less than 2 meters from the three Weasley brothers. Ron had a parchment and his chessboard out. The twins hovered over him, pestering him for a favor of some sort. Hiei couldn't help but overhear. "Please, we'll promise not to test it on you. We'll promise not to test our next, three creations on you." Ron rolled his eyes, watching his pieces move. "It won't work, guys." "Four, then. Come on." "It won't work," Ron repeated. "Not I won't, but it won't. I don't have that kind of range." "Ronniekins, don't call me that. What do you want us to do? Go out in the forest, chasing the guy, when we don't even know where he is? We've got cool powers, but we aren't that loony." "Out in the forest?" Hiei thought. He lowered his book. "Chasing what guy?" he asked.
"Nobody?"
the twins chorused hastily. Hiei raised an eyebrow, and Ron leaned back in his seat. "They got something from that demon in Genkai's test, and they lost it." "We did not. It disappeared," George added. "And they've gotten it into their heads that they can go and find the guy and make him replace it," Ron finished. "And they think they can get me to pinpoint him." Hiei kept his expression neutral, concluding, "You can't." "He won't even try," Fred protested, poking Ron. Nodding sagely, Hiei said, "Smart of him. The fox left last week." Their jaws dropped.
How do you know that?
All three blurted. Hiei shrugged. "I was on the roof the night he left." "On the roof of the infirmary, when Yoko had snuck into the hospital wing to transfer his soul back. You can spot that silver fur from a kilometer off, and he wasn't trying to hide. Except from everybody who wasn't in on his secret."
"So he's gone?"
the twins wailed. "Long gone," Hiei lied.
"What sort of bloody rotten luck is that?"
"Yours," Hiei replied, turning back to his book. Kurama fidgeted with the controls on his telescope, Neptune shifting wildly in and out of focus faster than the lenses could be accountable for. He raised his hand, clutching it into a fist and eyeing his fluttering pulse critically. A glance up at the sky didn't help. "It's starting too soon," he thought. "Dawn isn't for several hours yet." But the symptoms were unmistakable. The nearly imperceptible tremble in his hand, his pulse, too fast for his age and health, the way his pupils were dilating wrong. But it's too soon. What's going on? Harry woke to an insistent poking on his shoulder.
What?
Bright moonlight streamed through the room, easily letting Harry see Ron without the aid of Lumos. Your turn, Ron whispered, straightening as Harry sat up and put his glasses on, yawning.
Harry's turn. If they were on schedule, it was about 1 a.m. then.
Nothing odd, Ron added, except Minamino pacing the Slytherin common room.
Flu?
Harry asked sleepily. Ron shook his head. Only flu call was Mad-Eye for Dumbledore, and nobody's gotten an owl all night. Harry took the map.
Maybe it was too much to expect anything to happen this early.
Ron paused halfway back to his bed. You sure you're up to this?
We've already agreed.
Ron was a natural night owl. Harry was used to all-nighters from having to do his homework overnight at the Dursleys, and Hermione was an early riser. It only made sense for them to take watch in that order.
If you're sure.
I'm sure, Ron. Go to sleep. Sighing, Ron clambered into his bed, shut the curtains, and went to sleep. Harry closed his own curtains, cast Lumos, and settled in for a long night. Time crawled by as Harry watched the Marauder's map, gaze flicking for the first sign of someone near the edges of the map, sneaking on or off the grounds. But eventually, he found his eyes drawn back towards the elaborate lines of the castle proper.
I've never taken the time to actually look at the whole thing, he thought, unfolding it completely. I always just flipped open to the part that showed where I was, and hid it away as quick as I could.
On the map, all the student names crowded together in dorms, except for Kurama, as Ron said. He paced his common room restlessly. Professors clustered in a hallway behind a tapestry, save for Dumbledore high in the headmaster's suite, Trelawney asleep in her own tower, and Snape prowling near the great hall. Genkai's name had funny Japanese characters emanating from it, turning into Zeds before fading into the parchment. Of the other castle residents, Peeves hovered near the infirmary. Myrtle seemed to be inside a wall, no doubt buried in the plumbing again. Other ghosts piled into the attics and dungeons. In the owlry, Harry thought, I never realized the map actually shows owls. The birds fluttered about the tower, wide awake, their nightly hunting mostly done. He looked for Hedwig, finding her perched on the roof, Pigwidgeon circling madly around her like a puppy. Another glance around the sides of the map, no activity, and Harry checked on the population again. Kurama, Shuichi Minamino, paced agitated circles in the Slytherin dungeons. Severus Snape passed Gryffindor Tower on his patrol. Harry could picture him throwing a sneer at the sleeping fat lady. Hiei slept peacefully two beds over, despite the pleasant weather. Wait a minute. Just Hiei? Harry drew the map closer, squinting. Hiei was indeed shown without a last name. On impulse, Harry scooted down to check the Hufflepuff dorms. Yukina and Botan also didn't have last names.
Well, that's bloody odd, Harry thought, biting his lips so he wouldn't voice the thought aloud.
Hiei and Yukina, maybe it's something about that messy custody thing they won't talk about. That can't be right. Even orphans have last names on their birth certificates. Maybe having two different last names for a set of twins is confusing the map?
That still doesn't explain Botan.
He blew his bangs out of his eyes in aggravation, glancing at his watch, 3 a.m. They make no sense sometimes. Speaking of which, how do they think Yukina, of all people, can withstand Voldemort? Harry wondered. She's a Hufflepuff. She's not even that strong, magically, according to them. How can she stand up against him? She's all girly. Hermione would kill him for saying that. He quickly rethought that. Yukina was sweet and gentle and shy and quiet, and pretty much everything about her attitude screamed, "Protect me!" Not girly, except in the sense of a fairy tale princess in a tower or something.
She's really... Harry yawned.
a complete pushover. A weak link. Anybody can see that. That's why Voldemort's trying to recruit her. He yawned again. He couldn't fall asleep on his watch. Map still in hand, Harry slid past his bed curtains and headed down to the bathroom, where he splashed his face with cold water. It helped. Harry whiled away the remaining time down in the common room, playing Hang Wizard and Burn Witch and other games that were impossible to play with only one person. But by the time the sky shone gold white and cloudless in the east, and Hermione padded downstairs, he'd given up these two. "Morning," she said softly, voice fogged with sleep. Harry sat up, his wand falling from where he'd been trying to balance it on his nose. "Your turn," he said, waving a bit with the map. "Long night?" "Yeah." He dropped the map into her hand. "Wasted, too. Nothing happened. I'm going back to bed." Kurama didn't bother with breakfast. The instant he'd heard the first footsteps of an early rising Slytherin, early being some 10 minutes before breakfast, since the few windows Slytherin had faced west, panic had surged within his chest, and other places, and he'd bolted from the dungeons. Fortunately, he hadn't run into anyone or anything, except one locked oak door, which he'd promptly opened by making the wood pull away from the latch, as he escaped into a bright, sunny morning. Away, away, need to. If he wanted to avoid people, there was almost nowhere on the grounds that was safe. The Quidditch pitch had flying lessons, team practices, and almost no real cover. The castle itself, you couldn't be sure of privacy even with a locked door. Perhaps especially with a locked door, considering Harry last solstice. The forest would be perfect. The forest would be where he'd go if he weren't feeling quite so much. He usually snuck away to forested areas, but it set up a feedback loop. He can't handle that on top of this, whatever this is. The remainder of the grounds were open lawn, except the lake shore. Kurama hurried down the steep, switched-back path to the rocky strip at the base of the bluff, nearly twisting an ankle as he slid the last few muddy feet. He glanced around, taking in the view. Wide, empty expanse of water to his right and ahead. Nearly sheer cliffs, dotted with moss and the occasional clump of grass or ivy to his left. A few scraggly strands of lakeweed trailing in the rippling waves next to his foot. Nothing bigger than a stubborn yarrow weed or two. Perfect. He tapped into the too strong power, biting his lip against the rush and shoved it outwards. Lakeweed and ivy burst into leaf. Again Kurama pushed, grounding the power, and again they responded. Kurama walked forward, the scraggly plants brightening, tangling, thickening, and rushing over stone and water alike. Several meters farther down the shore, Kurama found a deep notch in the cliff, with a well-placed boulder inside. He sank down onto the stone gratefully, and continued to channel as much power as he could handle outwards. The angle of the sun changed imperceptibly. The day warmed. The bells of Hogwarts rang for first period, and Kurama ignored them all to push the power out. I can't go fast enough. Minamino! Kurama's eyes popped open. When had he closed them? At the irate, shrill shout. Not now, please not now. But Hermione Granger's shadow fell over the opening. Minamino, she repeated. Get out here! You've got class. What are you doing? Has she memorized everyone's schedules? And how on earth did she find me? Kurama wondered, before the excess magic he'd been trying to dissipate surged. He gasped, clutching at the rock he sat on. Minamino, don't make me take points! She stepped closer, threateningly. Magic surged almost painfully through Kurama, and he yanked the ivy over the entrance to keep Hermione out. Miss Granger, Kurama bit out. Please, get away from me. Get away from me. The sentiment stabbed through Hiei's head, stinging with the unmistakable steely taste of Kurama's mind. His hand clenched, snapping the candle he'd been about to light, and the taste in his mouth changed subtly. He'd bitten his tongue hard enough to bruise. It didn't matter. Dropping the candle, Hiei stood and walked out of divination, ignoring Trelawney's shocked calls for him to return. He darted down the stairs, out of sight within seconds, and slipped through an outwards-facing window. Outside, Hiei followed the sense of Kurama to the lake, passing the docks and circling the cliff face. The shore here was narrow, a strip of flat-topped rocks, and the occasional patch of mud between the water and the craggy bluff holding up the great hall. It provided the most privacy you could get outdoors at the school, with several of the towering niches deep enough to almost be called caves. It should have been almost barren, but today it was lush with a jungle of greenery. Hiei didn't need to follow the sense of power to find the niche Kurama had picked to hide away in. Unsurprisingly, for Hiei knew someone had to be there, Hermione stood at the mouth of the shallow cave. "Skipping class!" she was saying, hands on her hips. "Do you have any idea how bad this looks?" Hiei crossed his arms. "He's past caring, Granger." The girl spun to face him, yelping in shock. "Hiei, what? Don't you have class?" "Yes," he answered curtly, stepping past her to peer into the cave. Kurama sat on a stone near the back, face downturned and posture primly straight. Perhaps Hermione didn't notice, but Hiei did. Kurama's posture was stiff, his hands clenched into fists and white-knuckled on his lap. Hiei took a step forward, and ivy lashed across the entrance, blocking access. "He's been doing that this whole time," Hermione complained. "I would burn them away, but I'm afraid I'll hit him."
"Kurama, drop the vines," Hiei ordered. "I won't let her in."
A long moment passed. Then the ivy slowly, warily drew back. Hiei cast a quelling glare at Hermione. "Do not make a liar out of me," and stepped inside the cave.
"Kurama," he said as he slowly stepped closer. "You know something's wrong. Can you figure out how bad it is?"
A shake of red hair, Kurama's fists clenched tighter.
"Then I will," Hiei said. "Let go."
Kurama sucked in a breath, but didn't move. Hiei took another step, and another. He still wasn't in arm's reach. Another. Another. Kurama lunged from the stone, hands clamping onto Hiei's wrists. One foot kicked Hiei's out from under them. A twist sent them tumbling to the ground. Kurama's knee landing between Hiei's legs. The fox leaned forward.
"I don't consent," Hiei said flatly.
Kurama froze, and Hiei flipped them, jerking his hands free to pin Kurama.
10 seconds, with an audience, and able to stop," he diagnosed aloud. That was roughly half what it should be.
But why?
"Granger, go away. I know the problem. I've figured out the degree. I need to find the source."
The girl's hand hovered near her wand. "But..." Hiei's eyes snapped up and he glared.
"I'll meet you in 5 minutes. Every second's delay hurts him."
He bit back the almost automatic, "You stupid human!
And you violated his privacy enough."
She wavered.
"I'll explain after I run a quick medical exam."
"But you're not a healer."
"This isn't that kind of medical problem," he wanted to snap. "I just need to find a source. That's something I am an expert in."
And she was still just standing there.
5 minutes. Go away or I'll knock you out."
Hermione's jaw dropped. Then, with an offended huff, she pivoted on her heel and stalked away from the entrance. 5 minutes, she called back, and I'm staying within earshot.
What does she think I'm going to do?
Hiei thought, shoving his headband up. The jigan opened, overlaying Hiei's vision with multicolored threads of power. He stared at Kurama's pattern, the delicate matrix thickly shot through with golds, yellows, and greens, the magic of life, throbbing through the ground and vegetation all around, pulsing with Kurama's accelerated heartbeat. Almost none of the fox's proper silver remained visible among the swirling tangle of extra power. Hiei had never examined Kurama under such conditions, but this was far too much for anyone's health. Where's the excess coming from? He raised his eyes from Kurama to the surroundings, scrutinizing the power in the ground, the air, the walls. There was a strong, heavily concentrated flow running from the direction of the castle. From high in one of the towers, in fact.
From a small knot that seemed to be deflecting most of the threads of nature's magic from itself, high in the divination classroom. Hiei yanked the headband over the jigan. "Hell," he whispered, memories flashing through his mind. Setsubun, connecting Neville to the excess. Equinox, Kurama's childishness, treating the castle as his own personal jungle gym, whining about sushi. And Neville, slightly jittery but otherwise fine, having only that one accident. "When you have a problem, you really have a problem, don't you, Kurama?" He pushed himself up, drawing Kurama with him and resettling the struggling fox to sit on the rock. "Hold on, I'll fix this and come back." A quick twist of his wrist broke Kurama's grip, and he flicked to the mouth of the cave. "Control, Kurama," he said in parting, and darted around the corner. Hermione stood in the next fold of stone, arms crossed and expression determined. "What was that all about?" she asked sternly. Hiei gestured for her to fall into step behind him. "I'm fixing the problem." Hermione, being Hermione, ignored his gesture and walked beside him. "He attacked you," she blurted. "Of course he did," Hiei snapped, glaring. "He knows I can stop him." "Really?" Hermione asked. It didn't look like he was really thinking very much, honestly. "He was thinking enough to keep us out," Hiei pointed out. "And if someone besides you had gotten in?" she asked caustically. "What then?" "It wouldn't have happened," Hiei replied. Hermione rolled her eyes. "Are you so sure it wouldn't have? What if the Weasley twins had been trying to get in?" He hadn't thought about it. Impossible as the idea was, but some wicked impulse spurred Hiei to reply, "They probably would have been dumped in the lake." "The lake?" She immediately shook her head. "Never mind, you're trying to distract me. What's going on?" Hermione repeated. "It's not only today. He was acting strange on Equinox, and he performed that ritual on Setsubun." Her voice chilled. "Hiei, what did he do?" Too sharp. "What do you know?" "Almost nothing. That's why I'm asking you. He's being affected by the old holidays. Why?" That was not almost nothing. "Why do you think?" he asked as they began climbing the path up to the front doors. A moment of silence. "They're nature holidays. There's a surge of magic connected to the sun and the local climate every few weeks. So Kurama's affected like his plants would be?" Hiei rolled his eyes. "Very good, Granger." "Very bad, Granger. What else do you know?"
It was all in strange shamanistic terms." Hermione dithered. "For today it was the god and goddess wed, and from their mating..."
"That's enough.
I have two options. Forbid her to think about or mention this again, or provoke her to put the facts together and then make her deal with it. The first option would just make her that much more curious."
"Damn it. Think, Granger. Everything around him is telling him that it's time for the plants to pollinate, and he's a teenage boy. Even then, he would be able to manage, except it's being reflected back from another person."
Hermione gasped. "Neville!"
Hiei nodded curtly. "He's better at repressing than Kurama. Kurama's lived in his power all his life. I don't think he entirely remembers how to block."
She fell into wary silence as Hiei led her through the school. Then, "What exactly did you mean by fix the problem?"
"What do you think I mean? We take Neville out of class and make him stop repressing. Then we deal with it."
"Please tell me that doesn't mean what I think it means."
Hiei didn't smirk at Hermione's dismay. She was working with limited information. "No. You know where Sprout keeps her sick plants?"
"Yes."
"You'll start there."
He stopped at the trapdoor to Trelawney's classroom.
"If she asks, Genkai sent you."
Hermione, visibly too off balance to question that, climbed the ladder and knocked on the trapdoor. Hiei edged back out of sight. He didn't need the hassle of putting up with Trelawney after he'd walked out of her class. Low, tense voices, Hermione's and Trelawney's, both dripping with cold disdain, floated from the trapdoor, along with a thin haze of incense.
"Huh, never knew Granger and Trelawney disliked each other that much. But it didn't matter, as long as she got Neville out of there. What's taking so long? Hurry up! Another several minutes passed, then Hermione climbed back down the ladder with Neville in tow. She looked around as Neville replaced the ladder, his foot tapping rapidly against the stones. "Hie?" she called softly. Neville spun. "I thought you told Trelawney you hadn't seen Hie," he said.
"She lied," Hie said dryly, stepping into view.
Neville blinked. "What's going on?" he demanded, thankfully keeping his voice low.
"You, Baka, are going to—"
Hie began. Hermione interrupted. "There's some sort of magical power spike going on, Nev, and because you didn't know about it and are trying to ignore it, and because Kurama's got the same kind of power you have, he's getting knocked in the teeth with it. You need to go down to the greenhouses and grow some plants."
Hie stared in considerable surprise. He thought humans needed to breathe more often than that.
Neville blinked again. Okay, I'll go fix some of the wilting plants in Greenhouse 5. Apologize to Kurama for me.
Hie found his voice again. Make more if you run out. I don't care how, just make sure you're spending as much power as possible until curfew.
Hermione shot a sharp look at Hie. Please, she added for him.
Right, Neville agreed cheerfully. I'm off. See you both at curfew.
And he clattered down the stairs, pausing just once halfway down.
I don't have a pass, he called back.
If anybody heard that, Hie ran down the stairs.
Genkai will give you one.
Neville nodded. Thanks. He hurried the rest of the way down the stairs, Hie and Hermione following in his wake. At the bottom, Neville took the left-hand corridor. Hie turned right.
Wait, Hermione said, catching his sleeve. Where are you going?
Hie shook free.
To handle Kurama. You go explain things to Genkai.
As soon as the human girl was out of sight, Hie made for the nearest window. If only dealing with Kurama would be as simple as he had made it sound. Hermione returned the map to Harry at lunch with a low, "Something weird happened, but it's nothing to do with, him." Him sounded like she meant you-know-who. Voldemort. Unsurprising that she didn't say so at a crowded lunch table. But what could she possibly be talking about? Harry wondered. The three of them lagged behind the rest of their herbology class as the small two-house group flowed noisily towards the greenhouses. When they turned into the corridor and finally, fully separated from the students heading towards other classes, Hermione explained her extremely odd morning. Following Minamino on the map during her free period, Hie inexplicably showing up.
So that's why he ran out of divination like that, Ron whispered excitedly,
and curtly taking over. The aborted attack, the way Hie had chased her off to do a medical exam of some sort, the resulting problem with Neville, the way Hermione had butted in before Hie's overreaction made him lash out at Neville. So now Neville's in fixing Sprout's sick plants. I don't know why Kurama isn't, she finished, as they reached the row of greenhouses. Harry's eyes slid to the one Neville was using, able to see a veritable jungle within. Yukina drifted away from the crowd milling at the entrance to the fifth-year, third-term greenhouse, and silently opened the door to Neville's. Abruptly, the glass frosted over, and she quickly shut the door and returned to class. The sun had long since set when the excess power finally ebbed away. Kurama collapsed to the cool ground and rolled to his side, panting. Next to him, still on his back from their final round, Hie lay, breathing just as hard. A faint wind off the lake made them shiver, torn clothes providing little barrier against the breeze, and Hie automatically raised his temperature a little. All too quickly, the wind began to dry Hie's sweaty skin, his clothing sticking and itching with salt, traces of ash, dirt, and sap, and not a few traces of blood.
Ew, Hie thought, pushing himself shakily to his feet.
He staggered to the lake and, with a grimace, dunked himself, clothes and all, into the cold water. Crawling out, he raised his temperature another notch, glaring at the fox. Kurama looked as bad as Hie felt. His clothes were more singed and burnt in patches than torn like Hiei's. Damn Kurama's rose thorns. And his hair was a tangled mess, sticking to his face, neck, and back in dark, sweat-soaked locks. His shoulder still bled a little from 5 deep cuts along the back, clawed in by Hiei's own nails, sometime after dark. "The things I do for you," Hiei grumbled. They'd come out of fights to the death at the dark tournament looking better than this. Not many fights, true, but they had. No answer. The day had taken its toll on Kurama. He'd passed out.